Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
This is the Sporting KC Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It falls to Ely on the volley! What a finish! Gotti Kingda has struck! It falls to Polino and he puts it in! To Johnny Russell, first time shot, and Johnny Russell has a hat trick!
The Sporting KC Show is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Superior light beer with only 95 calories and 2.6 carbs. Michelob Ultra. Find your fit.
Now your host, Nate Buchanan.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I've got Allie Trost and Connell McCourt with me. My name is Nate Buchanan, and we are in some fancy new digs here today. What do we call this now, Allie? You've been working on this whole studio setup that we have.
Well, I don't want to take too much credit because I was
not
in.
Ben Messner had nothing to do with it.
I was here hours on end, overnight, putting up, painting walls, putting shiplap. No, I did not do any of that. I did carry these counters in on my own, though. I'm also
impressive.
Did not do that either.
They seem sturdy.
Just the new 810 Digital Studio. So if you're watching this via YouTube or on the Facebook page, you will see we've got our sponsor Michelob Ultra featured throughout. We've got a nice sleek-looking 810 studio with all of our branding, some Sporting Kansas City gear as well. So we'll be doing, as many of you got to see last year, we started doing the show on Zoom, which I think a lot of people really enjoyed having that video element. And our plan throughout the pandemic here at 810 was to add more video capabilities. And so now with the studio, we're able to do just that, but maybe up the quality a little bit. Zoom's great, but, you know, we got to up it a little bit.
As long as Todd Lebel stays out of the room.
Yeah,
course.
And then
we'll have a little interruption here later on in the show, but it is cool. We've got the Michelob Ultra video up on the board behind us. I've got my Sporting Kansas City hoodie on, you know, representing today. Connell's got his Celtic FC polo on.
I've kind of got the colors going on. Yeah, I've got like some blue here. So I tried.
And we have Michelob Ultras on the counter here that are very tempting. Are we allowed to drink these during the show?
Well, actually, right before we go to break, I heard we're all doing beer bongs. So
okay. I'm not ready for that. I just played in the ALS golf tournament yesterday, and I'm still recovering from that. So I don't know if I can handle that because, I don't know if you know, the phrase for Michelob Ultra this year is it's only worth it if you enjoy it. And I certainly would enjoy one, but maybe this isn't the time for me right now. So we do appreciate Michelob Ultra as the sponsor of the show, and we have a big show today. We're going to recap what was an historic night at Children's Mercy Park on many levels when they got a 2-1 come from behind victory against Austin FC in the return of Matt Beisler with Graham Zusi setting a record, all sorts of things to go over there. We're going to talk with one of the heroes from the game, Elie Sanchez. Elie scored the equalizer in the game. After all of those opportunities that Sporting thought would be the one, it was an unlikely source, Elie, who converted on a header from a corner kick to make it 1-1. He's going to join us from the cryo chamber. Little secret here. We've already taped the interview, so we'll tell you about that, but we'll play that interview for you. A great conversation with Elie coming up on the show here in a little bit, and then we'll preview quick turnaround here, Sporting KC at the Houston Dynamo on Wednesday night at 7:30, a game that you can hear live right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB in addition to Bally Sports Kansas City Plus. All right, guys, so let's get into it. Sporting Kansas City 2, Austin FC 1. I don't even know where to start when it comes to all of the different storylines in the game. Allie, what was the biggest takeaway for you from this one?
Of course you have to mention Matt Beisler and after the game, all of the really special moments. And I do want to say, one of the hardest parts, I think, in seeing Matt Beisler depart last season was the fact that he never got the proper goodbye with the fans because of the nature of you know, the season with the pandemic, and it was such a strange year, and then to see him go after that, not really get that proper send-off, I think was really hard. So really, really cool to see some of the pregame moments with him and his former teammates, and then at the end, of course, with the cauldron and the jersey and the letter. It's just, it's so touching and emotional, but that for sure. And then, you know, the other thing, just seeing Sporting with a come-from-behind win. Two late-game goals. They stuck to what their game plan was and what they were trying to do. And even though the goals weren't coming from some of the more likely players, Daniel Shalvey had a lot of opportunities, or Johnny Russell, Alan Pulido, to see Gadi Kinda come on substitution and to score the game winner, and then Elie to get the equalizer, which it was really interesting hearing him talk about that and some of the little tweaks that they made on that corner to put him in the proper position to get that header. But yeah, those would be the two takeaways for me. It was just a great game. And, you know, we now know that Sporting's about to have full capacity here at the end of the month. So anyone that's been out to CMP knows it's felt more and more like the CMP games, home games of the past. So that's a nice touch too.
Just the pop, even with when Gadi Kinda scored the goal, the roar of the crowd just sort of brought you back to...
Yeah.
No better time.
Maybe tripped him up on the flip there a little bit. I got a little nervous. I was like, oh.
Yeah, don't hurt yourself there. I'm sure Peter will be saying, if you're not going to stick the landing, don't be doing it. But, I mean, from the very start of the game, I was thinking, oh no, here we go again. Because I've watched Austin the past few weeks, and they're good, and they have no fear. They're like exactly what you would expect an expansion team to be. And the first few minutes, they were open. They tried to play football, and then they created the goal early on. So I was kind of thinking the worst, but... All credit to Sporting. They showed real character, came back into the game, really dominated the game, honestly. Bossed the game for large parts. And then tactical changes and stuff which were brought in because, I mean, Alex Ring must have had 30 tackles before he was even booked.
He was flirting with a second yellow card the entire second half, was he not?
Absolutely. And I couldn't...
I thought he was a lucky man to get away with the first couple challenges of the second half.
And being the character that he is... You're not really going to take him off. He's not a player that you would really substitute.
He's the engine of that team.
Exactly. And so
he had 70 touches in that game, which was by far more than anyone on either side. I mean, he was instrumental.
So I can see why Josh Wolf didn't take him off, but I thought it was a bit naive because, look, every one of us, all the punters around could tell he was going to get a red card. It was going to happen.
Like,
it was,
he wasn't.
And it was just a matter of time. So
yeah.
Sporting just baited.
There's so much time left in the game, too.
Right.
Well, it's I made a comparison to him and Roger Espinoza during the course of the broadcast. I know they don't play the exact same position right now. Ring plays more that defensive midfield role. But Jacob Peterson had said during the course of the game, one of the things that makes Ring such a special player is how strong and aggressive he is in the tackle, yet how good he is with the ball at his feet. And usually, I heard Caleb Porter, I really liked this analogy earlier in the season before I listened to him say an interview, and he said there's – When you're on a soccer field, you have some guys that are piano carriers and some guys that are piano players. And you got to find a way to mesh the guys together to do their job. And there are some guys that carry the piano and play it. And that's what I see in both Ring and Roger. Roger's so much better with the ball at his feet than people give him credit for because you notice all the crunching tackles and how physical he is and how fiery he is. But also we know about Roger. You know, people make the jokes about it. He gets his yellow cards. He gets his red cards. You can't turn that part. I don't think that's the kind of thing where you can just say, hey, Roger, just go easy out there. You're on a yellow.
Red card, Roger. Red card, Ring. You know, it just works that way.
Those guys, like, because I'm watching the game going, man, we've been singing this guy Ring's praises the whole game. And he killed his team. And, I mean, I think Sporting was a decent chance to go get that goal before the red card.
Yes.
But then it went from they not only can they get the goal, they can go win this game. And I thought Ring – for all the great things he did the whole game, he put his team in a horrible position, and it was coming. I mean, you could tell the referee, Ted Uncle, was trying not to send him off.
Sure.
And it's easy for me to sit there and say, man, you got to be smarter than that. You're the captain of the team. You need to know that you're playing with fire right there. But I think that with players like that, that's just in their DNA. They can't go in, you know,
You lose the player. You lose exactly what he's good at. You can't take that edge away. If you take that edge away, then he's not even half the player that he is.
And like with Roger, for example, I talked with Lo, who plays on the women's team with NWSL, and we talked about it. She was like, Allie, I mean, this is who he is in like a friendly game. Like she called him after a preseason game in Arizona, and she was like, you're playing against your guys. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
So, you know, I think it's so ingrained in the type of player that they are, and they can't play any other way because that's who they are, and that's what also makes them special. But in that situation, Nate, I agree, being the captain of your team and with the game so close, you have to be smarter in that spot.
So as a play-by-play guy, when I'm watching games, I am very interested in what the human storylines are to the game, even more so than I am what the statistical evidence are, you know, things like numbers.
So expected
are fine.
Goals.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff is fine. And, yeah. And there's a place for it in the game. But I think as I'm watching a game, if you tell me a certain story, like the one we're going to get into with Elie about how he almost refused to do a goal celebration video, I'll remember that story much more than I am if you tell me what touches per minute Elie had in the course of a game. Right. And I'm always looking for those things because I think those translate to the audience. These are human beings out there playing the game. And there almost wasn't enough time in the game to cover going, all yeah. of the human emotional elements to this match. Alex Ring gets the red card, the second yellow, and he has to walk over and hand the captain's band to somebody. And who does he walk over to hand the captain's band to but Matt Beisler, the guy that was the captain here at Children's Mercy Park for the vast majority of the last several years. And now he's going to be wearing the captain's band for another team in this stadium. That was one of those moments. But the biggest was after the game. Because during the game, when Graham Zusi goes out to make the start, he passes Matt Beisler for the record for all-time appearances at Sporting Kansas City. Graham Zusi's now third highest on the list of any player to make a certain number of appearances with one club only in MLS history. And he's doing it with Matt Beisler back in the stadium. Matt Beisler and Graham Zusi lived together in Beisler's family basement when they first started this amazing journey where they, I mean, it's almost impossible to yeah. say one guy's name without the other. You talk about yeah. Stockton and Malone and guys like that in American sports history. It's like Zusi and Beisler, they're there. And so then after the game, they go to midfield and they change jerseys. And Matt and Graham are not the kind of guys that go looking for a jersey after every match. They've got a few. I've talked to them both about it. I've got one here and there when something special happened, but they're not out there collecting other players' jerseys. But here they are. And Matt Beisler now is in possession of Graham Zusi's jersey the night he broke Matt Beisler's record. And they stood there at the center circle for a while. By the way, while this is going on, the Sporting KC players are lined up on the 18-yard box in front of the cauldron singing When the Wiz Go Marching In together. And I know they did it a few times last year with a smaller crowd and all that, and I know it's not a full crowd, but this felt different. It felt like, okay, here it is. This is part of the tradition. This feels more and more like we're getting back to real life. And Graham Zusi's not in the line singing because he's talking to Matt Beisler, and he finally realizes what's going on, and he kind of jogs over there. On the Border Patrol this morning, Tuesday morning with Graham, I asked him about that moment, and he said, and we tried to talk about the match for a little bit, and that just felt awkward. Then we talked about Matt's brand-new baby boy who was just born down in Austin, Texas, and that was kind of good to catch up. And then we just kind of stood there, and it was a little bit of a strange moment. It was almost like nobody knew what to say. And I think we've all had, like, it really hit me when he said that, because I think we've all had moments in our life, whether it was something sad and terrible had happened or something awkward had happened, where you're with your friend, this lifelong friend that you've known forever, or family member, and nothing is said and nothing needs to be said. We just need to be together right now. We just need to be next to each other, you know, and we need to be with one another. And that's the way I took that moment from Matt, or from Graham talking about it with Matt. And then Matt walks over. And at the time, I thought he was giving the cauldron the Graham Zusi shirt, jersey. Right. And I was like, I can't believe he's giving that to, I mean, that's a cool souvenir to give to the fans, but that would be one that I thought Matt would want to keep. It actually was a Sporting KC jersey with a number 5 on it that said thank you. And he handed an envelope to the cauldron as well. The cauldron kept it for a night. It was theirs to have. And then they shared it with the public alley after that.
Yeah, and I'd love to know when Matt wrote this, because I imagine him almost like in the visiting locker room and just kind of, you know, getting his thoughts down. But this is what the letter said. He said he addressed it to the cauldron, South Stand, and all of SKC Nation. It just says at the top, thank you in all caps. And then he goes into a full letter that was really touching. So here's what he said. Late last year, when I was informed I no longer had a future playing for SKC, I was heartbroken. What disappointed me most was not having the chance to play in front of you one last time or to say goodbye the right way. I want you to know how much I enjoyed playing for you. Representing my hometown was an absolute honor and a responsibility that I never took lightly. Through all the wins, draws, and losses, I tried to defend and protect Kansas City with all I've got. Although things didn't end the way I expected them to, nothing can take away the 12 years that we shared. We created some unforgettable memories that will last forever. There will certainly be a time and place to look back and celebrate those memories together, and I look forward to that day. In time, I hope to express my gratitude and appreciation towards you with more than this pen and paper can. Until then, best of luck and keep cheering on your players with the same energy and passion you always showed me. Thank you. Matt Beisler with the 5.
Unreal. Like, I mean, I think it'll only be a few years. It'll be a few years before people actually realize what Matt Beisler was to this club. Like, hometown boy, playing for his, going to the World Cup, playing for his hometown club for years, winning MLS Cups, US Open Cups. That doesn't happen. That doesn't happen very often anyway, like for many teams. We're seeing like these last few years, I don't know if it's just I'm getting older or whatever, but all these human sort of, like Scott Brown retiring this year, a couple of years ago, Stephen Jarvis.
That's a Celtic reference for those of us.
Sorry, I had to get one in.
Hey, you sent me the video and it made me cry because I'm a, Bruni is one of my favorite. He's any Celtic fan, but it's the same thing.
It's almost a mirror image of what it, because, I mean, Matt Beisler, when you think of Sporting Kansas City, you think of Matt Beisler. I mean, surely he probably wanted to finish his career out here. He was, this club was everything to him, and that was a really classy gesture at the end, going over with the note and stuff to thank the fans and whatever, to, because he never got a chance to do it. And it's kind of like, sports is the way it is. Very seldom do you get the fairy tale ending.
Yeah.
But it was nice that he actually had the opportunity to go over, thank the fans, and kind of show. I mean, all around class guy, really.
Yeah. It's for some reason, a lot of people, you know, give me a hard time because of my my man crush on Matt Beisler that goes back a long way. And look, the reason that that's a funny running joke is because there's truth to it. You know, I hold Matt Beisler in the highest esteem, as I do a lot of the guys. You know, Graham Zusi right there with him. And then so people ask me, were you a mess at the game? It was heavy. I will admit it was heavy. I saw Matt's family there, you know, watching Matt and Graham on the field together. Those things, but I wasn't in tears. And it wasn't that sad of a moment to me. It was a strange moment, but he'll be back. You know what I mean? Like he and his family are going to come back to Kansas City. They're going to live here. They're going to be a part of the franchise in some way, whether it's just coming back to games every once in a while, whether he works in the club someday, whatever it is, he is a Kansas City and he is going to be here. We're going to see him. This isn't like some sort of goodbye. So it's like a temporary weirdness, you know, where he's with another club for now. And he's got to give that club everything he's got, you know. And I thought he played really well for them, by the way.
Make no mistake, like he was coming to win.
Yeah.
He was coming to get those three. Yeah. He had a great game.
Yeah.
It was just out of his hands. Alex Ring decided to get himself sent off.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a great storyline. Now let's get to the soccer, because that honestly, the most important part is Sporting won the game. And this 2 come-from-behind wins now, guys, for Sporting KC in the first 4 games of the season. You don't want to make a habit of falling behind. But the answer, both times that they did in those 2 games, you got to feel good about what that says about the character of the team going into 2020. We're still trying to learn about what this team's really going to be this year.
Yeah, and I've said this from the jump. The fact that they are in the position that they are now, 2 wins, a loss, and a draw, all while playing without Tim Melia. And yeah, they have fallen behind and they have conceded goals in each game, but they are playing without one of the top 3, 5, I don't know, whoever.
The best
goalkeeper, but you could put him up there with the best of them in Tim Melia. And then not to mention the injuries that they've suffered across the back line. I mean, it makes sense why they have conceded goals, just if you were to tell people just those few facts about the team at this state. The good thing is that they are scoring goals, and what was great about that game against Austin is that they were creating chances. That was the thing that was missing against Real Salt Lake, and they were creating chances in the run of play, off of set pieces, on the ball. They had no shortage of chances, and it's just now a matter of getting more clinical with that finishing touch.
They were dead last in chances per game through the first 3 games of the season, and I talked to Johnny Russell about it before the game. He's like, that's not you guys.
No.
You watch Sporting Kansas City play since Peter Vermes took over here. They create chances. They go forward. They have creativity, and they don't always finish them. You know, there's been years where that's been an issue, but creating the chances has never been a problem. And so it was like, yeah, okay, there they are. That's Sporting Kansas City.
And especially when you have a player with the quality like Alan Pulido and Johnny Russell, when you're not creating the chances and not putting them in any position to score, that's when you get in trouble. And that was, I know, a big, you know, glaring issue in the Salt Lake game. So it was great to see them creating. Daniel Shallowy, I know, could have had it. That game should have been like 5-1.
Goalkeeper was very, I don't know.
Stuber was fantastic.
I don't know about you guys, but last year, going, a game like that, you're 1-0 down and it seems like everything's going against you, all these different chances and you're not converting. Last year I was panicking at that stage. This year when I was watching, as soon as the red card happened and it was 1-0 still, I was thinking we can win this game. Like I thought it was like a, whatever it was different from how we were feeling last year, maybe even the year before, where you were thinking, is it going to get away from us here? I mean, the amount of times last year that we conceded late on and just didn't seem to go our way. There was a bit of a different feel on Sunday. It seemed like it was more of a matter of when the goal was going to come and not if. And then eventually they got the winner again. So shows real character from the for them to come behind.
One player that I want to single out that I thought, and I was listening to the final whistle post game on the drive home, and somebody called in and was complaining about Gianluca Busio. And I just rolled my eyes, and to Chad Reynolds and Dave Borchardt and the subsequent callers, you know, credit.
Sean, our boy Sean.
They all were like, hey, that's insane. He was incredible. And I want to call it out because I didn't feel that way in the RSL game. It just never felt like Busio was able to make his mark on the game. And I don't know why that is. I don't know. I can't sit here and tell you he did this wrong or that wrong. Maybe it's just the way the game was going. But he put his mark on this game. And, yeah, he had chances to score that went begging. A couple times, really good saves. A couple times, maybe the shot wasn't where he wanted to place it. He was pouncing on loose balls in the attacking third. He was turning Austin FC over in dangerous areas and then being decisive with what he wanted to do with the ball. I think that watching him grow in that number 10 role through the course of the season is going to be one of the more fascinating storylines that we've ever had at Children's Mercy Park. And I thought, okay, he wanted the number 10. He played like he wanted the number 10 in that game. What did you guys think?
I thought he was super. Yeah, I thought he was brilliant. Again, the RSL game, sometimes it just doesn't go for you.
Sure.
You know, I mean, you don't have people aren't going to be 10 out of 10 every week. But this game, he really did. I thought he kind of grabbed it by the scruff of the neck. He was the one making challenges in the middle. And then when we were winning the ball back, he was the one looking up and spreading the play, giving the ball to Alexa Johnny or Kyrie or whoever it was. I thought he was excellent. I'm actually a bit shocked to hear this.
Yeah, I feel like I need to go back and watch, because I heard the same thing, and I need to go back and watch this game to try and look at it through the lens at which that person was.
Maybe people just did not have that reaction. Too much of him or something.
And the thing that I heard in the call was a little bit about how he's, you know, you never see him running that fast, some things like that. And I thought, I remember early in Busio's career here where he has this fluidity and the smoothness about the way he plays where it doesn't look like he's ever sped up. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like he's ever just going crazy, killing himself to get to a ball just because of his mannerisms and the way he runs. But then you look at the numbers in terms of how much ground he covered and how many tackles he put in, and you realize that wasn't, you know, that's just the body. That's just kind of the way his movements are. But I have to be honest, this game, and there've been a couple games lately where I've watched him and gone, he looks like he's killing himself out there. I mean,
yeah,
he looks
chasing,
like he is giving it every – I mean, he is busting his butt to get to the places on the field where he needs to be. And the scruff of the neck thing, that's a phrase you hear a lot in soccer. And there are – sometimes there are players that are so smooth that it seems like – look, this is my opinion, and I'm not trying to pick on somebody because he's a tremendous player, but I'll say like a Darlington Nagbe. In my opinion, the fault I have with Nagbe is if the game doesn't come to him, he doesn't go find the game.
Kind of passes him
you
by.
Know, he never loses the ball. Mm-hmm. He's great with. He might be the best on the ball in possession of any player in the league, and he's obviously an incredible winner and a champion and all that. But I always like that guy that when the ball does come to him, he knows what to do with it. But also, if the game's not finding him, he goes, I'm going to make my mark on this game, so I'm going to go find a way to make myself a part of it. And I thought Busio absolutely did that in this game.
Yeah, 100%. And again, I just could not have disagreed more with that caller.
It's just one call. We don't want to make too big of a deal out of it.
Give him opinions and all.
To talk around it. But, you know, I thought from a midfield, from game-to-game perspective, I thought that they looked a lot more organized in this game than they did. And some of those substitutions, which I know we talked a little bit about, you know, coming and we'll talk about with Ilya coming up, were big, because I do think when you are able to bring in a player like Gadi Kinda at that point in the match, when they are, you know, they do play a man down, and then you've got someone when they're sitting back and someone who likes to kind of play in the space and go at players with their speed and pace and just kind of cause, wreak havoc and be that disruptive player, it's Gadi Kinda. And so I thought that some of the adjustments made and that the personnel out there for Sporting were really able to capitalize on different moments of the game. And And they were creating the whole time. And I know there were some arguments online like, well, you know, they just got lucky because Austin went down a man. It helped that they went down a man. But I think they were creating and knocking on the door to the point where a goal was coming. It was just a matter of when, not
the Sporting with the best team, sorry, with 11 men on the park for when Austin had 11 as well. But one thing about Busio, I get what you mean. That's a good point you made about, because he does kind of move about. See, if you were looking at it with, say if you don't really watch soccer that much, and it kind of looks like he isn't moving a lot.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's just so smooth. Players are. But I thought in that game on Saturday, he was chasing for the ball. And that's one thing that really impresses me about him. I mean, look, we all forget because he's been around. He kind of has been around forever. You know, you can't really remember when he wasn't about. But he's still a young boy. He's 18.
I was having this conversation with Jacob Peterson the other day. We were playing golf together, and we started chatting about just the team and saying that, you know, some of the things that Benny Failhaber could do that you want to see Busio, you know, that Busio maybe hasn't shown yet or something. And Jacob said, yeah, when Benny Failhaber was Busio's age, he was playing college ball. He was riding the bench at UCLA.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, he wasn't even really getting on the field yet as a college player. And he went on to become one of the best number 10s in American history, you know, so we got to remember that.
And Nate, if you remember when we talked with Benny at some point last year during a few of our different podcasts that we did with him, and I think it was one of the Bundesliga ones that we did, he talked a lot because we talked about, you know, some of these young players playing overseas and growing themselves as players. And Benny was talking about it. The biggest thing is just getting minutes. It's like, doesn't matter, you know, if you're playing at one of the best leagues in the world if you're not playing at all. And so just getting some of those valuable minutes, even if you are, I think we were talking about like Josh Sargent or something, you know, playing on one of the it's getting those valuable minutes. And for Gianluca Busio, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see where he is at the end of this season compared to now because of just his versatility and then growing in the number 10.
And by the way, this is one of the better leagues in the world now. It's not at the same level.
It's not a retirement league.
Yeah, we're not going to sit here and say it's the Bundesliga or the English Premier League at this point, but it is one of the better leagues in the world. This guy, Gianluca Busio, has been going up against Reynoso from Minnesota in the playoffs last year.
He had
Alex Ring kicking him all over the place in this game. Tell me that doesn't make you better as a player going up against a player the caliber of Alex Ring for 70 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's going to be happening game in, game out
for
him.
And he's 18. And, like, so, I don't know. I mean, as you just said, that's not even a knock on Benny. That's just some players develop at different
the game was back then.
And
right?
The league's,
you know,
so different now.
Yeah.
John, like, Busio, he's 18, and sometimes under that pressure, fans back in the stadium, you're down 1-0, players can wilt. We've seen it happen before. He looks like he wants the ball. He wants to make something happen. He's chasing down, making tackles, spraying passes. I mean, he has a very, very bright future ahead of him. I know we all kind of get ahead of ourselves sometimes, but as Ali said, I would like to see him at the end of the year.
You don't ask for the number 10 if you don't want it.
Right.
And he asked for it, and then he went out and he played to me this game like he wanted it.
Yeah.
You can tell that in his approach, I think, in just about every game, even if it's not, you know, like the Real Salt Lake game was obviously not the result, and that wasn't a perfect game for the entire team. They just were really struggling to connect in the midfield, which is going to make him ultimately not look as good as he does in games in which they are creating a lot. But I think that he is an integral part of this team. When you're putting together that midfield starting lineup, you put down Busio's name and then you figure out who's going in spots two and three. So yeah. I think he has been fantastic. And the other thing I'm excited to see is, you know, now that Alan Pulido is getting back in the mix more, how those two play together. Because a lot of what we talked about last season that we never got to see was, what's this team going to look like when Felipe Gutierrez gets to play more? Because, you know, Busio does have some of those Felipe-type qualities at the 10. He's not a true just like all, you know, he does play, you know, his own style at the 10, and that's, I think, an influence of again, his quality and versatility playing in other positions. But the more that those two get to connect and kind of build that chemistry, I think it's going to look really nice.
Yeah, he can play the piano, but he showed that he'll carry it sometimes too, you know, when it's called for. By the way, Gianluca Busio had two assists to Alan Pulido last year when Sporting got the win, a big win down in Houston, Texas, and that's the game that's coming up next. We're going to take a break. We're going to have Elie on the show next with a guest appearance from Todd Lebo, just walking through the background here as we are on video. And then we'll break down this Houston Dynamo matchup on Wednesday night as we are underway on video and on audio. How about that? We're everywhere on the Sporting Kansas City Show presented by Michelob Ultra.
You're listening to the Sporting KC Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Sporting Kansas City Show continues on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. We are presented by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And we are happy to be joined by one of the heroes of Sporting Kansas City's 2-1 victory this past weekend in a big game at Children's Mercy Park against a brand new team, Austin FC. Sporting KC came from behind, and it was the man that we are talking to now, Elie, who scored the equalizer at long last. Sporting had so many chances through the course of the game, and it was, we could say, maybe an unlikely source for that goal for Sporting to draw level and then pull ahead to win later on in the game. Elie joins us now. Good afternoon, Elie. How are you?
How are you, Nate? I'm good to be here and be able to talk to you.
So, and I think we can tell everybody this. Right now, where are you as you speak to us right now?
Well, I hope you hear me well, because I'm in the hyperbaric chamber trying to rest and recover for tomorrow's game.
Which, that sounds kind of intimidating and scary for anyone who doesn't know what it is. So what is that, and what treatment are you getting right now?
Well, it actually gives you more oxygen than what you can get outside, and that helps you with recovery, and I mean, your body is able to get more oxygen, so that means that you can clean faster your muscle and your blood, so hopefully tomorrow I will be ready to go.
Well, certainly that's important for a week like this, where you have three games in the span of 8 days. And this is part of the whole new Compass Minerals Performance Center, where you guys train every day. They invested a lot into all of this technology to help you guys be able to recover and do your job. I'm curious. I've never been in a hyperbaric chamber. I don't know about you, Connell, or Allie.
Cannot say I have.
When you freeze.
It's not. That's a different one, right?
I've been in that one. I've never been in the oxygen.
Okay, that's the cryo chamber, right?
Therapy. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Do you do that one too, Elie?
No, I don't.
Okay.
We have it here, but I'd rather to do contrast bath. I feel better in water than in kind of ice. That is the cryotherapy. So I usually do. We have to choose in between the two treatments for cold. You can choose the cryotherapy or the cold tub. And I'd rather to do that contrast bath, where I go hot and cold for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Four times, and that's what I rather to do. Cryotherapy, I tried it, and I think it works excellent. But with the routine, I think I'm doing better with the contrast bath and then getting in the hyperbaric chamber. And again, it's a routine. It's not something that you will get in one day and then you will be a new man. You will run faster and jump higher, but it's a part of recovery process that we do pretty much every day or every other day, and we all choose what of the facilities we're gonna need for us to be able to perform. As you say, this facility is huge, and we have the highest technology and machines to recover and to perform. So why not to use it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done so. Some of the staff at SKC took me through the contrast bath, where he's talking about you sit in the hot tub for a minute and then you get out and you sit in the cold tub for a minute. And the hot tub part is so nice the whole time. And and you're dreading right. When the clock hits zero and you got to get into that cold tub, because that thing is painful. And then the whole time that you're in the cold tub, you're just counting down the seconds until you get to get out and get in the hot tub again.
You know what, Nate? That's funny, because they just add a second watch.
Yeah.
And it actually goes faster than a normal watch. So maybe that's a trick that the trainers wanted to add for us to be able to hold a minute or 2 minutes in the cold tub instead of being in the hot tub. So
yeah, it definitely feels like the clock's going slower when you're in the cold tub, for sure. But the cryo chamber, so you're telling us you spend a couple hours in there. So you just sit in there? Do you read a book? You watch a show? Like, how do you pass the time while you're in the – other than when you're talking to us, of course, on the SKC show?
In the hyperbaric chamber, I try to sleep. That's first. Always I need 5-10 minutes, maybe with music or some TV show to be able to fall asleep. But once I'm able to sleep, it's just an hour, 30 minutes, maybe 2 hours that I don't even know where I am at. And then you wake up, and it takes a while to be back to normal, but you can get a shower or you can just eat something, and your body starts waking up again, and I just drive home. But yeah, it's not, you cannot do much here other than maybe sleep or watch a show, because we have no light, so we won't be able to read here even we wanted to do it. So yeah.
Well, Eli, I am definitely intrigued, but I'm also a little, I don't know how I would personally feel about trying any of these, if I'm being completely honest. So I'm glad that they are, I'm glad that you guys have access to them and that they help, especially a week like this week where you kick off a stretch of 3 games over 8 days. You play Houston on Wednesday. How's the preparation been for both the team and for you?
I'm sure that if you try it, Ali, you will be able to feel the recovery process and that you that do the sport, if you
thanks
feel
for having
the benefit,
the faith in me.
Yeah, exactly. You have to suffer, right, to be able to perform. So this is not a place to suffer here. I'm honest with you, but yeah, once you try it, you can get used to that. That's for sure.
When I start an indoor league, I'll try it out for my recovery.
Yeah, just come over as Nate did and try to ask somebody to sneak you here and try it for an hour, and you will let me know.
So yeah. We're visiting with Eli, and Ali did ask you about getting ready for this game tomorrow night, and we will get to that in a second, but I do want to rewind back to this moment on Sunday when you guys came from behind to beat Austin FC. And Jacob Peterson and I, when we were on the broadcast, Eli, we got to halftime, and Sporting were trailing 1-0, and Jacob looked at me and said, I think that's the best half of soccer I've seen Sporting play all year, and we're losing by a goal. That just happens sometimes. Did you guys feel that way? What was the mood like in the locker room when you got to halftime? You're down by one, but it seemed that you had played so well.
Well, I think that we all agree with you, and we all could agree with you that we played a good half of soccer. Not just a good half, because after getting hit in Salt Lake with that loss, I think the team made or got into a process where we understood that we had to be back to our basics and our strengths that had been for so many years, with possession, with being a team defensively strong, and that we couldn't, we couldn't skip that. We had to be strong in that foundation. So we had a very good week of work, trying to build from the back, trying to get confidence in playing the ball, being better at the possession, and not losing balls that we didn't need to. And the mood at halftime, we were not happy with the result, but we knew that the only way that this team could come back would be through the possession of the ball, through creating chances, and through giving our forwards the possibility to be in front of the goal, because we know that they can score when they have the chance. So, yeah, some games are difficult. Some games seem to be longer than they are. But I think we didn't lose that confidence, and that we could be able to get the result. It's huge, important for us building towards the next games.
So, Eli, one of the key things I think that has kind of went under the radar from the weekend was the tactical change that Peter Vermees made with putting yourself back into centre-back and
100%,
and taking young Kaveh Rad off him, which, look, no one likes to see someone being subbed in and subbed back out, but for the good of the team, the tactical change was made. So, but you personally, being moved into centre-back, does your mindset kind of change there? Because, I mean, considering you're chasing the game, so are you kind of thinking, right, I'm a defender now, it's all about we don't concede, or are you still in your own mindset where you want to play your own game and pick passes? And because after all, you're chasing the game, you want a goal. So how do you kind of approach that?
Well, I actually think that not especially that move, but also bringing Kaveh in, bringing Jay in, bringing Remy, bringing Curry and Gavi with the right mentality in the right time, doing this tactical move. When the other team was with a man down and trying to find solutions, especially in the second half, that's what gave the team the energy and the spirit to go for the game. Personally, I think that when you have the ball, for me it's the same playing in the midfield than playing in the back line. Because at the end of the day, it just changed the view that you have for the field. In the midfield, you just see half field. From the back, you see three quarters of the field. So it's actually better for me because I have no one coming from behind. Mm-hmm. And I can focus more on moving the ball faster side to side. It's easier, I would say, to play in the back line when we have the ball, then when we don't have it. On the other side, when we don't have it, I have to be a little bit more aware and knowing that I have more responsibility because I'm the last man, and trying to be faster in my decisions when to step and when to not to step. But it's a similar position. You just have some details that you need to change in your mind. But, yeah, we had the ball, and it was a game where we had to push to come back with the result, and that's what I tried to do, and I think that it worked.
Well, Ilya, kind of going off of that same, you know, you playing defensively in the midfield, but then also playing at center back, I opened up some questions on Twitter for you, and Sean Goodwin with the Kansas City Star wanted to know, you know, have you been helping Pulse Camp? Because he's mentioned your name quite a few times in different players that have helped him get comfortable back there and the, you know, on the back line. They talk about the last defender, John Polskamp, is back there in the net in place of Tim Melia. So what have your conversations been like with him to help get him more comfortable and defensively just getting everything, you know, that chemistry there?
I think I've had good conversation with John back in preseason. He was with us last year, and you could tell that his mentality is always a winning mentality. And when I say winning mentality, I don't say that he wants to win, because we all want to win, but that he actually works for that and that he actually gets ready to improve, to be closer, to win every training, every game. So when you have a young player in your team with that mentality, there is not much you can tell him other than when he does something right, try to make him feel that we all see that. And when he does something wrong, try to not give that too much importance. So that way they know that the way that they see themselves is that the way that we can see them. So it's more about giving them confidence in what they do right and trying to build from that than, you know, punish them when they do something wrong. John, it's been improving very fast. I think in preseason he started taking right decisions, especially when he had the ball on his feet. And one of the things I told him is that we all know that he has the quality on his feet, and it's now all about the taking the right decision every time. So more than on the feet, it's in his mind. And I think that he understood that, and he's working also with Alec, the goalkeeper coach, every day. And it's not what I can say or not. It's more about his work every day.
We're visiting with Elie. He scored the equalizing goal for Sporting KC in their really exciting come-from-behind 2-1 win over Austin. And I want to ask you about the goal now, Elie. And I like to tell this story. The first year, I don't know, Ali and Connell, if you guys have heard this one, but the first year that Elie was with the team, he came in to play the six. We know how important that number six role is in this system, the same one he grew up in Barcelona playing. And when you go down to preseason in Arizona, the video staff at Sporting always has a video shoot where they shoot those videos that you'll see when a player scores a goal inside the stadium. They show, and there's a video of the player doing a celebration or something. And the Brad Mertel, our producer, told Elie, hey, show us a goal celebration. We need to have video in case you score a goal. And Elie said, I don't score goals. That's not my job. My job is to play the six. And I think about every time you score a goal, and it's not very often because that's not your job, I think to myself, it's a good thing they really made Elie celebrate, you know, do that goal celebration. So the reason I like to tell that story, though, is because I think it gives context, Elie, to the moment in the game like that where you're doing all these other things. You have all of these other jobs to put the other players in their positions to score. And the guys that we would normally say, you want the ball on their foot to score, had their chances in the game. Busio, mm-hmm. Shallowy, Pulido, they had their chances, and it just wasn't happening. Whether it was great saves by Stuver, their goalkeeper, or you know, just maybe barely missing the target, whatever, it just wasn't happening. And then there you are, on the doorstep for a corner kick, and you turn it home perfectly. Can you take us back through that moment and then what the emotions are like for a player such as yourself to come through for the team when they needed it so poorly at that time?
Well, they forced me to do it every year, the celebration thing, and I'm still not used to, but the marketing guys, they are very creative, and they give me some ideas every year to do it. So that's a funny story, funny situation. I would say that, it's not my main job. I'm happy to help the team in any way. I used to think that when I score, that means that there was something wrong with the team. Yeah, because you want the other guys to score. You want the guys with better skills, better finishing, to do that, to be able to be in front of the goal, for them to show the qualities. But I would say that on Sunday, that goal is more than half from the cross. You know, Johnny put an excellent ball to the first post, and it was a simple job for me to do, to be able to win the position in front of the center back and to head that in the goal, in the net. I would say also that Alan is very smart in the way that he came to me, because Busio, as you remember, he crossed two or three similar corner kicks to the near post from the other side right before the goal. And we couldn't get to those balls because I was being the first guy to the near post, so the ball just popped right behind me, and I think it was Pellegrini was able to clean all those crosses. So Alan realized that and came to me and say, let me go first, so hopefully I pull out Pellegrini, and either me or you, we can have a header to goal. And that's exactly what happened. So I would give them the credit. First of all, the cross is pretty much everything when someone scores a header, but also the movement from Alan pulling out the first guy in the near post was the key for me to be able to score. After that, it's just putting your head and trying to direct the ball to the net, and happy to tie the game. And I was very confident. I think that not just the players, the coaches, the fans, yourself, you were all confident that we could come back no matter what was the time left.
Well,
I think it was Pochettino, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Pochettino. Yeah, correct.
The name of one famous manager over another there, as the thing. I knew where you were going with that.
I was thinking about the guy in Roma, Pellegrini. Yeah. Sorry.
No worries.
I missed the name because they are similar players.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Pochettino was a good player.
Yeah.
Good player, too. Yeah. I like him. Yeah. I like how he played. Yeah.
Elie, how often does that happen in a game where Pulido or, you know, another player will recognize maybe a little tendency on it, whether it's a set piece or just something else, and go up and say something to the team, even if it's not? Was that during halftime that conversation happened with Alan, or you had mentioned that it happened after Busio took a couple of corners? So how often does that happen, just generally speaking, and then in the game, what was that conversation like?
It was right before Johnny got the ball to kick the corner kick. I think that this happens very often. It's constantly, the communication is very important in these situations. And Alan is a very smart player. He knows how to play the game. And yeah, when these kind of players come to you with an idea or a thought about what's going on the field, you have to listen and try to do it that way. I think that also Roger was communicating from the back. It's very important because, as I said before, they see three quarters of the field, and that's huge that happened in a team to be able to overcome situations, tough situations like being down on the result. We all expect that coming from the bench. It comes nonstop from the bench, but sometimes either you don't hear it at the right time, or it's just a fast situation like the other night with the corner kick, and you just have to trust your teammates because, two brains think faster and things more than just yourself. So yeah, I think that that happens a lot, and that's good that that happens.
Elie, just before we get you out of here, I was just wondering if you're still keeping up with your old club Barcelona. They play today. They play Levante. It's still very tight at the top of La Liga. There's only 2 points in it between them and Atleti and Real Madrid in the middle. Do you think they can still win it?
I think so, yeah. I think that the schedule for them, it's a little bit, I wouldn't say easier, but that they can do it. But obviously not in their hands. Atletico is first place right now. If they win 3 games, they're champions. And Madrid is also second place, tied in points, but with the average goal in their favor. So anything can happen, especially this season and with these teams. But hopefully Barca can win the 3 games left for them and then wait to see the difficult schedule for the other two teams.
Well, Atletico's next game is against Real Sociedad, so that'll probably sort it all out. So,
Yeah, they play at home, but, you know, Real Sociedad is a team that doesn't care too much where they are playing. They always do the same style, and they always play the same way. So, you know, they also play the last game against Valladolid in Valladolid, playing for the relegation. So every game is going to be tough for the three teams, and hopefully Barcelona can win the title. But most important, that Sporting can win tomorrow.
That's right. That's right.
That's what concerns me right now, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Sporting Kansas City against the Houston Dynamo down in Houston tomorrow night, Wednesday night at 7:30. Elie, we hope we helped you pass the time in the cryo chamber a little bit. And we hope you're full of lungs, or your lungs are full of oxygen and ready to go tomorrow night. Thank you so much for the time. Congratulations on a big win on Sunday, and good luck tomorrow night.
Nate, you saw I was getting a little bit dizzy with the names. So it's time for me to sleep right now. Thank you for calling.
That's it. Take a nap. There's Elie. We will take a break, and we'll come back to wrap things up. We'll preview that match against the Houston Dynamo when we come back right here on the Sporting Kansas City Show.
You're listening to the Sporting KC Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we are back to wrap things up on this edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show, presented by Michelob Ultra. Great conversation with Elie. Yes, if you were watching, you got to see Todd Lebo sneak into the room, accidentally hit a camera. Connell let out a little bit of an audible gasp there as well. Hey, this is our first time in this brand new studio, and this is really exciting because we're going to be doing this pretty much every week now going forward. And I want to tell people this as well. If you're listening to this show on Sports Radio 810 WHB on this Tuesday night, we thank you for listening to the live radio version of it as well. There is an extended version of this show. If you want more of this content, you want the whole thing, you can. Where can they get all the? We're going to post this video, and so you can watch the whole thing and listen to all the phenomenal content that we have for you.
Yeah, well, just the true audio podcast, you can get wherever you listen to your podcast. You can go to 810WHB.com. We'll have it up there under additional programming, and then we've got a soccer, Sporting KC, KC soccer section as well. But if you want to watch the video, see our lovely faces, you can go to the Sports Radio 810 Facebook and YouTube channel. The YouTube is 810WHB, so you can watch the full version there. It's the same effect. You just get to see us. What could be better than that?
You see these two beautiful faces right here that I get to look at every day. It's really pretty exciting. Okay, let's get into this matchup tomorrow night, 7:30 at the Houston Dynamo for Sporting KC. The first thing I'm going to be interested in is what kind of squad rotation are we going to see here? You know, players like Remy Walter, Guidi Kinda, Kyrie Shelton that came off the bench in this last game. How will we see them get used? Graham Zusi told us on Tuesday morning on the Border Patrol that the plan was for him to play 30 to 45 minutes. He ended up playing 54 because he felt so good at halftime. They let him run out there. Does he get some minutes in this game? Do they change him out a little bit? Alan Pulido and Johnny Russell got 90 minutes on Sunday for the first time this year for both of them as they've been working their way back from injury. You know, Peter Vermes has a game plan. He doesn't just, you know, show up on game day and say, who do I feel like playing today? He's already planned a lot of this stuff out. I'll be interested, guys, to see who we see on the field on Wednesday night and for how long.
Well, and especially when you consider how hot Houston is. I was just there. It is not the most pleasant place to play. It's definitely a bit muggy. So that will, I'm sure, play into, you know, some of maybe speed up that exhaustion process. If, you know, you may have been good to go for 45 and maybe you're only good to go for 30 just because of the climate down there. But yeah, that load management, if you want to call it that, is going to be really key. And especially when you consider some of those injuries defensively, you know, the center back room's getting thinner and thinner with some of the tweaks that players have picked up. So interested to see what they do there. But I think, you know, some of the players that did come on check in later in the game on Sunday night will likely start in this game.
You see, it's hard to gauge with Peter sometimes because there was a couple of times last year where there was this kind of clump of games together and he played the starting 11 in two games in a row and then gave like the third or fourth game and he started giving people.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell, but I expect the three that you mentioned there, Kyrie, Guidi Kinda and Remy Walter, I would expect them all to start tomorrow night because you're going down. Like the players just played 2 days.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's not a Saturday to Wednesday. It's a Sunday to Wednesday.
Right.
And they've
Sunday night.
What the coaches have told me is that one day makes a huge difference.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, you're going to need at least 2-3 days for their bodies to recover at all. But it'll be interesting to see because it's Vancouver on Sunday, and look, you can be too clever around these parts where you may be thinking Vancouver's a weaker side than Houston. So you drop the players for the Vancouver game and play the starters for the Houston game. But it kind of just depends on who's fresher.
I'm guessing. Both conference games, too. So, you know, like it is important to pick up two wins just when you're playing a conference opponent.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think the positive here is that Sporting, even with a few of those injuries that they're dealing with right now, they do have quite a bit of depth,
right,
which they'll definitely tap into for
this
game.
Which hasn't always been the case. Like, I mean, there's sometimes you were last year when it was getting really thin and you were taking players off and you're having to bring in academy kids and maybe kids who aren't ready yet, having to bring them in, just throw them in the deep end because there was bodies going down left, right and center last year. So I'm sure they'll be wary of that, remembering like last year getting a bit of a hangover from when players were hurt and injured. But I would expect to see the three that you mentioned there all get a run out tomorrow, especially with Keane to come and he was a match winner.
Well, there's just bodies going down center right now, not left and right, just center. Yeah. Center back is the issue, as Ali referenced, is right now on the injury report, Nicholas Isimat-Mirin and Roberto Puncic both listed as questionable with those hamstring injuries. So Kaveh Rod could be, you know.
Graham Smith, another, you know, player that they'll have available, whether on the bench or maybe, who knows, in the starting lineup. But Fontas has looked, talk about, you know, a player that has been fantastic this year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
well, and let's not forget the possibility. Could we see Elie back there?
Yeah.
I mean, he played back there. Now, that was a different circumstance because they were up a man and you knew it was going to be all in the attack for Sporting KC in that game. But we have seen Elie drop back there a couple times in his career. So I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
Can't rule it out.
Honestly, before we spoke to him there, I would have said he would have always have preferred to be in the midfield. But the way he sounded there, he actually sounded like he enjoyed playing centre back. He was saying, yeah, I'm able to see more of the pitch. I can, you know, kind of, I still play my own game, still try and pick passes and be assured on the ball. So that might not be a bad shout, Elie in at centre half.
Well, you mentioned Vancouver maybe being a weaker side than Houston so far this year, and that's the team coming up on Sunday afternoon at Children's Mercy Park. They've got two wins, a draw, and a loss. They're in the same points as Sporting Kansas City, and they've had a couple of impressive results so far.
Their goals
this
have
season.
Also like all been off of set pieces.
Yeah.
You guys see that?
Yep.
It's just a weird stat to consider. Which, you know, defensively, that it'll be important to be really organized and to have, you know, maybe some of your preferred players out there if you're if Vancouver's goal is to try and create set pieces.
Yeah. And meanwhile, the Houston Dynamo 1-2-1 on the season. They're coming off a 1-1 draw against FC Dallas. Houston, one of those teams, they just haven't had the investment that other teams have of late. They just haven't gone out and spent when this MLS, what are we on, 3.0 now?
Yeah.
With you know, the Alan Pulido joining Sporting Kansas City as a part of that movement. We haven't seen Houston take that step here. They had a couple of really good quality offensive players in Albert Elise and Mauro Minotas. They're gone now. But you can't take Houston lightly because they always have a good, solid MLS roster. And if you don't show up to play, they're going to beat you. And and even if you do play well, you're going to have to play really well to beat them. They went 2-2 against Sporting Kansas City last year.
Absolutely. I mean, they still have players that can hurt you. Memo Rodriguez,
yep.
Maxi Rudy, they've got up top now.
Maxi Rudy will run you ragged,
absolutely,
too, by the way. He will.
Defenders, yep. And that's why it might even be a smarter thing to have the likes of an Elie in
somebody
there
that's calm on the ball.
And someone that knows what they expect. If you throw in a Kaveh Rod or Graham Smith, whatever, younger guys, they're going to. Maxi Rudy could be a terrible sort of task for a young centre half because, as you said, he doesn't stop running. And then they've got players in and around him as well that can feed him. So I'm sure Peter won't be taking them lightly.
Well, and a couple of like unexpected players, too, that they haven't seen. They brought in Tyler Pasher from Indy 11, and then they brought in Fafa Fekalt from FC Dallas, who are players that could cause some trouble out on the wings. And then they did make some investments defensively. So it'll be a different-looking Houston team. But still, like you said, Nate, they're one of those teams, if you don't come to play, they're gonna prey on your weaknesses a little bit. And if you don't have an Albert Elise or a Minotas, you still got to come with the game plan and you got to be ready to go.
There's decent players that can't get a game as well. Darwin Quintero and stuff can't even get on the starting 11 or anything. So
yeah, he's played some limited minutes this year.
Yeah.
So
his work rate at this stage in his career is the question, but the quality is still there and he's done damage
for sure
to Sporting when he's had the opportunity.
Well, and that's why you don't want to let this, you know, be a game that it's really close up into the end, because if he is a player that maybe checks in later on in the match as someone that could really, you know, be the difference, like, between a win, loss, or a draw, just depending on how the game shakes out in those early minutes in first half.
I'm glad you brought up Tyler Pasher. If you watch our pregame show, starting at 7 o'clock on Bally Sports Kansas City Plus, I had a conversation with Peter Vermees, and I asked him about Tyler Pasher because he was here in Kansas City as part of what was at that time the Swope Park Rangers that were playing for trophies at that time at the USL level. Always liked him. Guy that I mean, you know, found himself at kind of that left-back position but would just fly up and down the flanks. He's got some real pace to him.
Yeah.
And the reason that I think there's some of us kind of have a little bit of a cult following of Tyler Pasher is one thing you're not seeing much of in American soccer right now is the player making that jump from USL to Major League Soccer. Guys that make that transition are usually academy guys. You know, Sporting Kansas City will put a lot of their homegrown players in at the SKC2 level and then move them up. But it's those guys that maybe aren't part of a homegrown program that are trying to make their career. They put up a ton of goals. They put up production. For whatever reason, you don't see anybody in MLS thinking that they're ready for a shot up. And maybe it's just because the gap from USL to Major League Soccer is so big. Tyler Pasher was tearing it up last year. I mean, he took his game – as I like to say, to a whole nother level. You see, another is a word now. But but he did. He was a good, solid player for Sewell Park Rangers, but he wasn't playing at the level that he was last year for Indy 11. And I'm glad to see a player like that. You would like to see more of that start
that
to happen. You know, guys from USL, you produce there, you get a shot somewhere, and he's right. getting a shot at the Major League Soccer level now.
Well, and it's fantastic. That's why I think people are so excited to see a guy like Wilson Harris finally start getting minutes with Sporting, you know, the first team. And, you know, you look at Amadou Diya. I mean, he spoke, Nate, when we talked to him last season, so highly of what he learned playing at the USL level and how, you know, not just developing on the field as a player, but the leadership, all the different things that if you're willing, if you're really willing to hone in on your game and to get yourself prepared and ready for the MLS level, you can absolutely do it in the USL.
And it also shows kids as well, like just guys who may have had a trial or whatever, like Amadou Diya, played at Sporting for a while and then dropped down a level, kind of, They know what it's worth. They know what it takes to get. So they know if you work hard, if you see these guys coming through and making headway in the MLS, then it gives other people a chance. Wow, you really can do it. There is a pathway here.
Gives
people
you a character chase.
People are watching here. People are scouting and stuff. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'm sure Tyler Pasher
has extra motivation
to prove. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's saying, I'm going to go out and let them know that they were wrong to let me go or whatever.
And that assumes he's healthy enough to play. He was dealing with a little bit of a knock this past weekend, so we'll see if Pasher's out there on Wednesday night. And that's going to do it for us, guys. We're going to wrap it up now. Our thanks to Elie for joining us on the show. Again, the details for the broadcast tomorrow night, starting at 7 o'clock on Bally Sports Kansas City Plus with myself and Jacob Peterson with pregame coverage, and then kickoff around 7:30 down in Houston, Texas. And you can hear the game right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, as well as watching it on Bally Sports Kansas City Plus. And we appreciate you watching the video stream of our new fancy studio presented by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. For Ali Trost and Connell McCourt, this is Nate Buchady saying thanks for listening and watching to the Sporting Kansas City Show.